Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Yachting International Radio. I'm your host, Gabriella, and this is Diversity in Yachting. Today, we're joined with Remy Callow. He is the chief executive of Dockside in the Netherlands. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gabriella. Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Would you please introduce yourself to our audience and let everyone know what Dockside does and what you do and how you got started?
Exactly. Very welcome. My name is Remy, as you said, Remy Callow, Chief Executive Officer of Dockside, Dockside.ai. We're based in the Netherlands, and basically the first time we started as a company was 4 years ago in the Netherlands in Amsterdam. And we started as actually a support, shore support agency. And the moment we started here in the Netherlands with an agency, everybody thought we were mad. We were like, you're mad? You're going to start a yachting agency in Amsterdam? Like, yes. And the moment I start explaining what we're doing and everybody look, okay, that makes sense. But still nobody were convinced what we're going to do.
So that would make you guys the only company offering this type of service. So you were kind of creating an industry.
Exactly. The moment we started, everybody said, thought about it like, okay, we're the pioneers in that respect in the Netherlands because we have the biggest builders, yards in the Netherlands, the Ocean Coast, the Fed Ships, the Amos, they are all here and based in Netherlands. And I told them like, okay, I had meetings with them and like, hey, can I help your captains? Can I help your yachts that are being built? And you guys are not doing anything with them. Basically, the moment they're built, they're finished, they left. So like, oh, why can I help them out? I mean, I have the knowledge. I've been working in St. Martin. I've been the fueling guy over there. I have the technical knowledge. I have the fueling and the lubricants information because I've worked about 10 years in St. Martin. So why can't we work together? And they started like, okay, you know what? Let's see what we can do. But in the meantime, I had my clients already because I work in the Caribbean, working as a fueling guy and especially as a lubricant guy, knowing all the captains, knowing all the engineers. I was like, I had my database already built and I had my Rolodex. So for me, starting in Netherlands was basically just starting everything up. I went to the Chamber of Commerce, I registered myself, and that was basically my beginning.
Wow.
Although it was very, everybody were very amazed. They were looking at me like, yachting? Because the word yachting in Dutch means gun. So the moment I said, I'm going to work in the yachting industry, and they're like, you're going to work with guns? I'm like, excuse me.
So they thought you were going to work for the NRA? Like we have in the States, and you're going to sell machine guns?
Exactly. So that was the beginning. And it was in a way also funny, but it was also like, hey, why don't people
know about this?
Something? Why don't people actually click about it?
Uh-huh.
So, but in the main, then I realized that the main moment I start talking about it, the yachting industry in the Netherlands is basically really, it started as new. I was the first one here and everybody was looking like, okay, let me see what you can do, basically.
Right. And
having a can-do mentality, I'm like, oh, I'll show you.
Right. I can do a lot of things. So basically you had to create an industry that didn't exist. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then you had to set the standard to let everyone know, like, this is what I'm doing. This is how you do it. And then once you complete that first task, then you can build from there, right?
Exactly.
So you started as like the fueling guy for super yachts, right?
Yeah.
And then that went into brokering and that went into crew services and crew placement. And now an academic training center for upcoming yacht crew.
Exactly.
All in 4 years? Or is this like over, how long did this take?
We've been going like mad actually the past four years. We've been starting, we've been putting all this together.
Wow.
The benefits I had basically because I knew a lot of the yachts already. I know a lot of captains already and a lot of loaners already in the from the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
So basically when I was in the Caribbean, it started also like, oh, you're the fueling guy. Do you know this? Do you know that? Can you help us out? We have to do some linen. Oh, we need some flowers and everything. This was already started in the Caribbean.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it works. Like you would rather go with people that you know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why everyone says networking is such a major thing in this industry because people would rather go with their friends and, you know, share the wealth in that sense. Like, hey, I know you're not a florist, but you know, you always have nice flowers in your house. What do you want to buy some flowers for this yacht that I'm working on? Boom. Now that person has a business, you know, that's amazing.
So that's why how it started. Basically I copied actually always the blueprint I already had in the Caribbean back in Amsterdam, actually the support and the crew, the support services basically. So for me, it was already basically bread and butter. So I knew that already.
Yeah,
and I knew the captains, I knew the owners, everybody like, but we might have actually, we're looking for a new yacht. Can you help us out? Hey, I'm in the Netherlands. I have the biggest yards here. So I can introduce you. I can go there. I can talk to them. So I'm like, hey, why not? So it was far more. Yeah. I mean, it was.
It was very organic. It sounds like it unfolded organically. First, you started 10 years ago in St. Martin as an IT guy.
Exactly.
What? That's just so random. But like, after you say you got your training for 6 months and then you learned everything there is to know about lubricants and how to fuel super yachts, it seems like everything organically just progressed. And now that where you are now, it just makes sense. You're like, well, yeah, duh. I know everybody and I know everything there's to know about yachts. So this is just, this makes sense.
Totally agree. So, and the other way around was like being a Dutch, I mean, I speak the language, know actually all of the culture is actually in that respect. So I know my base around here, and I have also, what you said, my network already based in the Netherlands. So basically my network outside the global, St. Martin and yachting, which I brought back in the Netherlands and started mingled those two together into one. And that's also basically my Rolodex for my company.
Wow, that is really cool. That is very admirable. I have a lot of questions about how to do something like this. You're going to be my mentor. No, I'm just kidding.
No worries. I mean, the moment that, I mean, I love to have actually not even love, but I would love to have people that are willing to do it. And I would love to train people. And I mean, I have success. I mean, I'm still having success and I'm enjoying it very much. I mean, today I had my nephew, he was asking like, you have your own business. What's happening? I was like, hey, I'm enjoying. I'm not seeing it as my work. I'm seeing it as my hobby and I enjoy it each and every day. And I'm learning each and every day. And I'm doing the fun stuff each and every day. And it is basically keep me going on.
That is amazing. I love to hear that. And so now you have how many different like sectors of Dockside?
We already have basically 5-6, and we also starting refit by end of the year.
Wow, that's so amazing. So I wanted to ask, like rewind a little bit and talk a little bit more about your background and what it's like being a person of color in the Netherlands and in the yachting world. I'm sure you're kind of ethnically ambiguous. I'm sure it confuses people. You're speaking Dutch, but people expect you to speak Hindi. So I'm like, what's going on here? Because our brains work that way. We see the way someone looks and we want them to fit in a certain box. But for us, it's different. We don't do what people expect us to do. When I open my mouth, people are like, excuse me? How? People expect me to sound and speak differently than I do. So how has that worked in your favor or against you as you were getting into yachting and as you were building your brand?
I mean, in the beginning, when I was in St. Martin, I had no problems, basically. I had actually, in that respect, the benefit being Dutch.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly speaking, because I still have the Dutch mentality, like Dutch people are, the German people are known as like 6 o'clock is 6 o'clock. Hey, time is time.
Yeah.
So captains love me about it, and especially all the engineers, because I'll tell them like, 7 o'clock, everything is arranged. 7 o'clock, you want to leave at 7 o'clock. I'll make sure 6:45. We finish 7 o'clock, we have to leave. And that has been the major gain for my success.
Because Caribbean, everyone's kind of on Caribbean time?
Caribbean time, not even only Caribbean, but captains and not yacht owners, but engineers, they're like, you'll be at 6 o'clock or traffic jams or whatever. And they're like, 7 o'clock, they're not still being fueled. And fueling takes a few hours, they're like, I'll be losing my locks, my bridges and everything. So I'll be losing loads of time. And I make sure, understanding that part, I'm like, hey, being Dutch, I'm like, oh, you want to leave at 6 o'clock? I'll make sure you're leaving 6 o'clock. And especially at that time, I was working in the oil industry, like, hey, 6:45, here's the account, here's your invoice. Can you sign? And you can leave. Sorry.
Now?
No, I mean, it's that because they receive actually the fueling, they can sign. I said, okay, that's actually one of the things. And that has been the benefit for me. Although when I came back in the Netherlands and started in Amsterdam, we are very multicultural. The moment I start telling everybody, like, hey, I'm going to be a yachting agent, everybody looked at me like, there's something wrong here. Really, everybody looked at me like, yeah, but the industry is totally, we already have, we don't need you. I told them like, what? Basically, that really ignited my fire, like, hey, I'll show you.
Yeah.
So, and really in the beginning, and when I went, I really to a few authorities, actually, especially in the yachting industry, I told them like, hey, I'm going to the yachting agency. And like, yeah, it's okay. Oh, nice try, basically. I was like, okay. What? And I told them like, look, I don't need you.
Right.
Because I am my client. I have my knowledge. So you can have really an authority. You can be an authority, but I don't need you.
Right.
So the moment I started here, I got clients into Amsterdam, and everybody started calling me up and like, oh, hello, can we work together? So, excuse me, no, I don't need you.
Yeah.
I was really, that was very blunt, because I was like, hey, I don't need you. The moment I needed you, nobody was there. And I already have my own business. I have everything. I have my clients coming in. I can do everything. So I don't need you guys.
Right.
So that was really the downside of it. And I mean, it also, the benefit was basically, and it still is, if I go to the Monaco boat show, everybody knows me. I'm the colored guy.
Okay, well, I'm going with you now next time. I want that VIP treatment.
Because they know I'm the Dutch guy in that respect. And yeah, I'm from Amsterdam. And they, yeah.
And you're probably the only brown person in the crowd most of the time.
Yeah.
And
that's always been though.
You get used to it, right? Isn't it bizarre that we get used to this?
Exactly, very much, yeah.
So to a point where sometimes you don't even notice until you pay attention and you're looking around, you're like, oh, I'm the literal only brown person here.
Exactly, yeah. Then you realize, like, you start talking, and the moment you look around, you're like, oh yeah, I'm the only one here.
Yeah, it's
and that's, I mean, that's crazy though, but honestly speaking, I never had a problem when I came back in Amsterdam when I started my business. Then the only time I had, like, really, in Amsterdam, this is happening, basically. And nowadays, everybody's knowing me. And now, you know, I mean, sure, I was a new kid on the block.
Right.
New kid on the block and being of color. And they're like, oh, sure, yes. I was like, wrong answer.
Right. Well, I think that's because I think sometimes people of color are automatically underestimated. So you have to know more and be better at your job than everybody else, because they're already expecting you to not know what you're talking about and to possibly fail.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of pressure that comes with, and a responsibility that comes with being a person of color. And when you're like the new kid on the block, you're creating a new concept. So people probably just didn't see the need in what you were trying to bring. So it wasn't they were doubting you so much. They were doubting, like, do we really need this? Is it going to work here? And you saw something they didn't. And now they're like, oh, so, you know, you had to make sure you didn't fail, which I don't think you did think you were going to fail, because you seem to be very, like, matter of fact, like, and confident in your training and your knowledge, which is probably the key to why your company has become so successful, because you didn't let anyone tell you no. You just said, okay, well, you're going to miss out. I'm going to do it anyways.
I think it is also because I'm the last one in family. I'm the youngest one, so I can do anything. And when I was like, I want to do this, and everyone said no, I'm like, I'll show you. And it was really,
that's really real. I'm the baby of the family, so I've gone a completely different path and lifestyle than my older siblings.
Exactly.
So I'm just kind of the black sheep of the family.
Sure. And there, yeah, I had the same though. When I started, I'm like, yeah, I started in the telecommunications. I'm like, it started when I was with my education though. I was really like the straight A student, and I finished with my high school. And my parents asked me, being Indian is very common, like you start, I'd become a lawyer or a teacher or a doctor. So the moment I really, and I like, they told me what I'm going to study. I'm like, I'm not going to the university. I'm going to start hospitality. I'm going to hotel management. And they were like, what? I had to fight for 5 days. Like, okay. Then the moment I started hospitality, hotel management, and I'm like, oh, this is too easy. Yeah. So they were like glad, and they're like, oh, they were really like glad. The second year I've done actually also the university starting business. So they were already glad that I did also graduate at the hotels management school, and I graduated both together with university together with business.
Oh, wow.
So they're already like all thankful and that I also done my university. And the last one, because I had also a politics, degree in politics.
Okay, so how many degrees do you have? How many degrees do you need, sir?
Only three.
It's enough. Only three. No big deal. It's just three.
Not a big deal.
Oh, yeah. I used to be a senator, or I don't even know what they have, a prime minister.
No, but that was really because I've done loads on at the university, and I do loads of sports, and I was actually honored with a scholarship for the university.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, what can I study more?
Yeah. You just so like to learn. It seems like you were eager to learn.
Eager to learn, but I was having fun. With my family. I was having loads of fun, though. I was like, yeah, sporting each and every day.
School was just a hobby for you.
Yeah. That's the whole thing. That's how I tell everybody. The moment you have fun, time doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter if you color white, black, brown, or whatever you are.
Yeah.
As long as you have fun.
That's true.
I tell everybody in my company also. I tell everybody, like, hey, we're working hard. If a yacht comes in, we hardly sleep for a few hours. And we keep on working. But the moment they're gone, we party all night long. So, let's go have some fun.
Nice.
And everybody looks at me and they're like, yeah, so hey, don't worry about the money. Everything is being paid.
Yeah.
They look at me sometimes. They look at me like, what? I was like, hey, we work hard and going to play party hard also. So everything we take also everywhere.
Work hard.
Just to make sure. Yeah.
Because then what's the point in the hard work if you can't enjoy your life?
Exactly.
And share it with people that you care about, you know, or that, you know, you want to share that with people. That's great. Can I come work for you?
Sure. I mean, as long as you keep up the pace, I'm okay with it.
I love that.
You can start.
Nice. So can we go back to what your IT days in St. Martin? When you left the Netherlands to go to St. Martin, and then you ended up staying there for 10 years?
Yeah.
Okay. So how long were you in St. Martin doing IT before the opportunity to learn about fueling came into the picture?
Basically, my IT times and my IT days were all together in the Netherlands already. So the moment they're like, oh, there's a job opportunity in St. Martin, I'm like, okay, let's do it. I can leave the country. So when I went there in St. Martin, I started straight away with my training with this oil company in St. Martin itself.
Okay.
So
I'm going to be honest. I've been on boats when we go get fuel, but I seriously still, I'm going to get backlash for this. I don't know where they put the fuel in. I don't know where it goes.
It depends. I mean, sometimes depending on the boat that it is, you have really like a small hole in the back. You're like, and you chuck your holes in it, and there it goes.
That's it.
I thought it was way nothing spectacular though. Really nothing spectacular.
Oh wow. Okay. I thought it was something like very, very, you know, I'm usually in the laundry room just ironing. I don't see anything that's going on in the exterior. So every time we go fuel, I was always like, I wonder where I don't see like a gas tank on the side of the boat. Where does it go?
And depending on which marina you are, you have actually everything, the whole infrastructure is already there. They put the holes in and you hardly fear anything. You don't see it, anything. Maybe you don't even smell it, though.
No.
If it's done correctly, you don't even smell it. So it's nothing really. It sounds very spectacular, but
it does. It sounds like very like scientific and intricate or something. Very, you know, difficult.
I mean, The fueling is okay. That's really not. Although depending before the fueling, I was already in talks with either with the captain or with the engineer, because certain engines are looking for certain types of and certain quality of the fueling. You have really different types of the fuel. You have A, B, C, and really all. You can go really to E, and that is already the moment I start fueling. Everything has already been discussed. Because I have already a sheet showing to the engineer, and together we're talking about, oh, this is actually what the flame is and everything, those kind of topics, what the sulfur is and everything. That has already been discussed prior to the fueling itself.
Yeah.
That's, in that respect, is very, that is very interesting. I was, yeah, being I like my chemicals, so like, oh, back to school, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Especially even the engines, you can, knowing the thickness of the oil itself, of the lubricant itself, how it will lubricate. So those kind of things I could not explain totally with speak to the engineer. And sometimes if not, I was going with dirt respect to Houston, Shell Houston, because I was trained in Shell in Houston. So I'll go straight away to the lab, and I was speaking to the lab guys over there, like, oh, this is type, this kind of engines, they have this kind of fuel lubricants. I mean, cannot provide on the island. What can we do? So then another really whole together, sitting together, like, oh, what can we do? Which type of oil we can use? And that was really, yeah, I felt really fantastic to do that, though, honestly right. speaking.
No, that's interesting, because when I was a deckhand, I love being a deckhand because I get to work with the engineer a lot. So they teach yeah. you how to do shore power, how to flip the generators. I actually really enjoy it. And learning yeah. how to read all the numbers on the, to, you know, the temperatures when we're underway, and, you know, keep watch of the engine room, look for smells yeah. and sounds with flashlights, make sure everything's running properly. I actually really enjoyed that part of my training, you know, yeah. so I can totally see the appeal there. And so you speak, so basically it's like you speak multiple languages. You can speak to yacht owners, yeah. the captains, but then the engineer and other brokers. There's different terminologies and languages involved in all of those different sectors, right?
Exactly.
And you basically yeah. can connect with anybody in any part of the company or the industry, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, in that respect, that is also basically one of the secrets of my success or of our success, mm-hmm. because I can connect really, because my hospitality, I can connect with the chief. With the purser or with the chief too. Mm-hmm. I can speak with the owner about everything. I can speak to the captain and the engineers about the engines, about sailing, about everything. So right. that's really put all together. And that's made this really, really, yeah,
you have
easier.
You have to know a lot of things. Like you have to be able to code switch, essentially. You know, because sure. the way you talk to the owner is not going to be the same way you talk to the chief stew.
Totally agree.
It's all different.
Honestly speaking, I never done that because I, again, basically my background, but I really appreciate everybody who what he is or she is. Mm-hmm. I don't mind if people really, I don't like, oh, you're the chief stew, I'll be talking about this and this. Well, okay, no, everybody is a human being. Mm-hmm. And I really respect everybody as a human being. I don't look after, okay, sure, an owner is an owner, but still he's the owner.
Yeah.
But he's still a human being.
Right.
And that's really my, basically my life goal is like, hey, treat everybody as a human being, yes. no matter which role or he or she has.
Yes. Okay. I love that. I mean, because everyone's equal.
Exactly.
You just have a different place sometimes or a different tax bracket, but that's really the only difference.
The other thing I think also of, which also my philosophy is like, hey, everybody is really the perfectionist and the better person itself on their role they have to play. And even the chief steward is a chief steward, of a purser is a purser, owner is a purser, and the captain is a captain. But at the end of the day, if you treat them well and you treat them with respect, you get respect back.
Absolutely.
And really, that is my goal. And I make sure that that will always happen. And even some, if people are working for me, all my personnel, I'll make sure that everybody respects each other, especially the client. Don't go on a yacht or a boat and like, oh, she was just choose to. It's like, excuse me. The moment somebody does that and can be really, and it'll be a really hot talk we can have, because right. I hate that.
Yeah.
Again, I've been there. So I know sometimes how it feels.
Yes.
And then I think that brings me back each and every time, because I know how it feels. You know, you go on a country because you're like, okay, you're the color, but your accent is Dutch. You're like, so what's the problem?
Right.
And that's because I take that everywhere in with me and in me.
Yeah.
Just make sure that, hey, don't matter who you are, whatever you are, respect is the big thing.
Yes. Yes. Respect. So question, you did say that you grew up sailing. You have some sailing background?
I have my sailing background, yeah.
Wow.
I'm a hockey background. Sorry.
I was just wondering what size boats you grew up sailing on.
I've done actually the Commodore 8, the 6, basically. Each year I go to St. Martin, to Florida, Heineken Regatta.
Wow.
And the only regatta I do, basically. And each year I want to go to the bucket race in St. Bart. But each and every time I'm like, oh, I have to be there somewhere, but I cannot make that part.
Yeah.
And I was really annoyed this now with the COVID. I'm like, damn, sorry. I could have been in New Zealand for the America's Cup. I was invited.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, I want to go.
That's amazing. So you grew up basically on the water. So it's not like you're like, oh, I was in IT and I randomly got into yachting. You've been a mariner your whole life, and you actually take a genuine interest in being on the water and regattas, right?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So it's not like just a random left field idea, brilliant business idea you had. This is where you belong, basically.
Again, yeah. I mean, I had to be, yesterday I was off, the day before I was at the gym, and I was speaking to the personal trainer, and he was like, oh, you haven't been working outside. Yeah, it's COVID. I'm like, I'm here now because within a few weeks, I have actually my kite surf. I wanted to go kite surfing in St. Bart. And he was like, kite surfing you? And he was really looking at me like, kite surfing you again? I'm like, okay, there it goes again. And it was really surprised. So,
it's like, these are traditionally white spaces, right?
Yeah.
Water sports, sailing, yachting, boating, fishing, anything outdoorsy. There, people are not used to seeing us in these places. And that's why I like this show. That's why I feel so blessed and grateful to be able to meet people like you, because it's all really just about the normalization of seeing brown and black people in these spaces. It doesn't mean like they're not out there. People just think, oh, that's black people don't do that, or brown people don't do that. It's not true. We do. We just, it's not seen on a global commercial level.
True.
You know? So all I would like to do is normalize seeing people like us in these spaces that people think are for white people only. So it's really funny, because you probably always get this when you're on a sailboat. I get it. I surf. So when I have my braids and my wetsuit on, people are just kind of like, you know, when I tell people I surf, it's like, oh, you surf? It's like, why wouldn't I? I'm from California.
Exactly.
Does everyone surf out here, you know? So I think that's funny that you mentioned that, because kite surfing, I'm too scared to try. But yeah, you wouldn't normally see a brown person on a kite surfboard.
No, I had the same thing when the first time I went with the whole group, when I was in university, we went skiing, winter sports.
That is very light.
Yeah, and totally. The first time I went there, and really all my schoolmates, they were looking at me like, are you really, you know, it's cold over there? I'm like, yeah. Like, okay, so what's the story then? And like, yeah, but it's very cold, it's freezing, and your color. I said, yes, I don't care. I am going into sport, so make way for me, man.
Yeah,
so that's,
I think you're just kind of a rebel, and when people tell you or don't expect you to do something, it kind of makes you want to do it more.
Yeah. And again, honestly speaking, again, I've been also doing skydiving also. So everybody looks at me, you're skydiving. I'm like, I jump off the planes, man. Come on, what you're talking about?
That's super cool. I mean, we have acts, you know, I know a lot of these things are privileged sports. Like to me, skiing, I'm like, oh, Aspen, whoa, like, you know, but this is something I'm trying to get out of my mind as well, because these are open spaces that are available and should be available to everyone. Obviously there's some, you know, socioeconomic things that prevent a lot of people of color to do some of these things. But at the same time, if it just becomes normal for us to do these things, it will just be normal. It won't be such a shock every time. I learned how to sail a month ago.
Yeah.
People are just like, sailing? You're learning how to sail? Why? Why not? It's cool. It's fun. Like, you know, more of us need to do whatever it is we want to do and stop saying, oh, that's for a certain group of people. Oh, and this is for a certain group of people, because all of these things are not just, it's not a character trait or a trait of race. It's just an activity.
It's activity. Just enjoy it.
Just an activity to enjoy. Anyone can do this, you know? So that's really fun. It's very...
I think one thing what we always do is that respect, especially we make actually boundaries for ourselves. Yes. Like, that is not for us. That is a white thing, this white thing, or this is for not. That's like, excuse me, why are you doing that?
Right. I used to do that a lot when I was growing up. I don't know where I got it from, but I did. I think I noticed that a lot of my white friends and peers growing up, they went on family vacations. They went to Europe on family vacations. They went camping in the mountains in the snow. And I just didn't see any of my friends of color doing those same things because, like I said, maybe it was a socioeconomic thing. Yeah. So at a very young age, I was like, oh, that's white people's stuff.
Yeah.
Like climbing a mountain, I'm like, why would you climb a mountain? That's white people's stuff. You know what I mean? Why would you do that voluntarily? You know, so there's just certain ways that white people seem to spend their leisure time that to me did not make sense. So I put that thought in my own mind, and you know, it doesn't help that you don't see it on TV.
Yeah.
Growing up, you don't see it in the outdoors magazines. You don't see it in the boating magazines. So it was part of me putting those boundaries on myself, but also it was being reinforced by the media and advertisement, you know? So I'm 33. I know that's not old. I always say I'm 33 and people are like, okay, relax. But I'm barely coming out of that mindset at this age, you know? So I'm just trying to make sure my niece and nephew see me doing these things so they don't have to think that way when they want to try something new or want to do something like, oh, I can't afford that, or oh, that's white people stuff. It's not, you know?
Yeah. That's one thing. I mean, I'm doing the same. I mean, I have niece and nephew. So even today I was speaking to my nephew, like, hey, I'm looking for a sales guy. And he's just graduating. I'm like, oh, and he was like, oh, okay. Like, but I cannot do that. I was, excuse me. Don't say I cannot do that. You did never tried it. So how can you say that I can do that? I'm like, don't put the boundaries already there without being already experience it. I'm like, if you experience it, oh, within 2 months, like, oh, this is really nothing for me, then you know it's nothing for you. But don't already shoot it out. I'm like, hey, it's nothing for me. I'm like, that is really a boundary that we're putting, especially a lot of people are putting themselves in. And I think it's unnecessary.
I agree. So just for fun, if you didn't start this company and you were to go in the yachting route, which type of yacht would you work on and which position would you work on?
I mean, I would go really starting as a deckhand.
So you would, but I would go the engineering route or the captain route?
I would go to the captain route.
Nice. Yeah.
I think I would go, I'm very ambitious, honestly speaking. So I feel not even as a captain, like ambitious, but I'm like, oh, I can go to the captain. Why not? Why can't I try to become a captain?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's also always my way of thinking, but always my way of learning and pushing the best out of you each and every time.
So do you feel like you would be able to live in the crew quarters with a bunch of people from around the world that you don't know? Do you feel like that would be fun for you, or that you wouldn't like that?
Oh, that was fun. One of the things is like, when most time when my clients come to Amsterdam, Well, before the yacht, the boat comes in, I already sent an email to the captain. I'm like, hey, one day, I don't mind which day, I want the whole crew all together. And we go from 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon till 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever. I'm taking the crew out for some drinks. And what I always do is, like, especially in Amsterdam, I just take a small boat and we go to the canals and we keep on partying and just looking around and like the canals. And we have a stop each and every way, each and every corner. We have some drinks, we have some food, local food, local stuff. And sometimes I have to laugh because I'm in a small boat with like 12, 13 nationalities.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just, in a way, that's fun because I never felt, I mean, sure, I'm Dutch. My passport is Dutch, but I never feel like I'm only from the Dutch because I only want to speak with the Dutch because I enjoy it because I'm like, hey, this makes it so much fun that every like 12 nationalities all together and we're still having the same language, the same fun, mm-hmm. and nobody is being left out. And that's fantastic.
That's what I think that's what I love about yachting the most. Before I even thought about doing this, I used to go backpacking and I would stay at hostels on purpose because yeah. I loved interacting and getting to know people from around the world. Yeah. And that staying at hostels was like the best way to do it. Yeah. I don't know if I would stay in a hostel now, but when working on a yacht is kind of like staying at a hostel, really. Yeah. A $20 million yacht hostel. You know, with like a 3-star chef, but, you know, it's, I think that's my favorite part about it. I get to meet people like you and like Rhea and, you know, there's a whole community that's sprouting up of other people of color that are in this business that I love. I think that's a great thing. And I see the industry changing a little bit and for the better in that respect. And, I'm just excited to be able to witness it and be a part of it. You know, the beginning of something, which is so
the thing is, like, I think the most important part is like is being together and see new things, try new things. And I'm really always I love to try new things. Sometimes I'm like, well, I shouldn't have done that, but okay, whatever.
At least I tried it.
The thing is, like, 9 out of 10 times I love Brazil, and when I go to Brazil, so I always go to the favelas. And everybody thinks like, excuse me, you went to the favelas, to the slums? I'm like, yes, this was the most fun part of Brazil, though.
Right. They have like parties in the streets over there.
It's parties, but everybody's so inviting. Nobody looks like, oh, you're the rich guy or the poorest guy. Nobody cares. And you're like, oh, have a drink. And that is fantastic. So inviting. And that's the most, I really enjoy that. I really doing that.
Nice. You're making me want to buy a plane ticket and just get out of here. But then I remember there's a pandemic, so I can't. Anyways, I wanted to thank you again for coming on the show and speaking with us. I think you're an inspiration because a lot of people don't know that there's several different ways you don't just have to work on yachts. There's so many positions in the maritime industry that if this doesn't sound like something for you, you can always go a different route. And, you know, you're opening doors in the Netherlands for people as well. So that's really, really cool. Yeah. And, you know, I just want to, you know, end it there and say thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. I had great fun speaking to you. And it was great fun. I mean,
thank you.
To showing my world and how I started. And
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into Diversity in Yachting. My name is Gabriella. This is Remy. And stay tuned for next week's show. Thank you.
Thank you.